Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
And good evening. I'm John Jeffers. We're having a delayed broadcast tonight. Thank you for joining me. Those that stuck it out, especially to Joe's, glad you're here. This show, we're talking about urban survival. If you want to partake, we got a couple, well, we got four ways you can partake if you like. Got the chat room, just go to blogtalkradio.com/contraradio, register, and you'll be given access to the chat room. You can hit the Skype button. Or you can call in. Two phone numbers, 516-453-9389. Again, that's 516-453-9389 or 855-355-8458. That's 855-355-8458. We're talking about urban survival tonight at request of Kirk in Southern California, who lives in the environs of Los Angeles. Kirk is a friend of our show, and he asked specifically that we do a show about urban survival. And I think this will probably cover survival in the greater suburbia. Before I get to it, though, I want to make a – for the Patriots out there and some of the listeners have commented to me, whether on the Contra Radio Network Facebook page or by email – which is ContraRadio@live.com, about the militia, the Oregon militia standoff with the FBI, and the subsequent arrest and shooting of the rancher, I believe his name is Vincicum. If this is episode 116, we talked about the fact there was a lack of video, and lo and behold, the next day, the FBI puts out the video, makes it public. Now, this video that they put out is from a aircraft, fixed-wing aircraft, I believe. So when you look at the video, you're getting kind of like the bird's-eye view. It's really kind of hard to see stuff. And let me put it to you this way. We said it before last Wednesday in episode 116. Myself and Terry were discussing that. It's odd that there's not any better video. Here we have a high-profile incident, high-profile scenario going on. Now, apparently there's no dash cam video. The video they did put out, there's no audio. And it just, I don't like to second-guess law enforcement officers on this one, or any other situation until all the facts come out. However, just from the observations, this is just my observation, it is not fact. It's just what I have seen and my interpretation of what I've seen. It would seem to me that the FBI would have, because this is a high-profile scenario, that there would have been a video other than a fixed-wing aircraft overhead. I find it hard to believe the FBI doesn't have body cams, knowing this is a high-profile scenario. I find it hard to believe that the Oregon State Police, and I don't know if they were on location, there's no dash cam video, no dash cam video from the FBI. The sheriff's office, on the other hand, I'll give a benefit of doubt. Maybe, because I've never been to their county, I have no idea what it looks like, or what kind of crime statistics they have, but perhaps the sheriff's office has never felt the need for body cams or dash cam video. But I don't know what their budget's like or any of that other thing for that county. I just don't know. But I do know the Oregon State Police, if they were there on the scene, you know, there's just a lot of, look, let me tell you this way. You watch the video, and look, I don't know this guy, this rancher that got shot. I don't know anything about the guy. Only what, you know, what's been put out there. But I would suggest this, and this is just my observation. I'm not condemning anybody. Is this? It appears that the FBI has long guns pointed at this guy, this rancher. Now, I don't know the mental state of the rancher, or don't know the mental state of any of the law enforcement officers on the scene. But it would seem to me that if you have long guns pointed at you, I mean, this isn't Hollywood, where I'm going to outdraw the guys who have guns pointed at me already. Now, I'm not saying it didn't happen. What I'm saying is it just seems out of the ordinary. Somebody who's had firearms, I would assume he's had firearms training. And let's face it, I myself, personally, if I had long guns pointed at me, there's no way on earth I would get the idea that I would be able to outdraw the long guns and shoot these guys down before, you know, they got a shot off. It just isn't reality. In Hollywood, it is. In the real world, no. With that said, the longer the FBI takes to answer these questions, and I just can't believe they put down that video with the fixed-wing aircraft. I can't believe that's the only video available. Because if it is, then there are some serious managerial questions that have to be addressed. I wanted to put that out there. I know a lot of you have seen the video as well as I have. And it's just like, come on. Now, I just find it hard to believe there's no dash cam video with audio. There's no body cam video with any audio. Now, on the other hand, What can I say? That's my observation on it. Now let's get down to it. We're talking about urban survival. And in some respects, what applies to prepping in general still applies to urban survival, and it also applies to if you're out, quote unquote, in the country. Now, we got this one from offgridsurvival.com. Offgridsurvival.com. If you want to read the article yourself and, you know, click on the links in the article, that's fine. You'll find it posted in the Contrario Network Facebook page. Just scroll down, you'll see it. Well, this is something that has to be talked about, all right? It's often overlooked. It's not ignored, it's just overlooked a lot. And it's something we have to talk about. And we're talking about the urban survival sanitation. These are the items you need to stockpile. Okay, so when you're planning to survive in an urban survival situation, one thing that's often overlooked is the danger associated with the lack of adequate sanitation. I know it's not a pleasant thing to think about, but this one issue has the potential to kill more people than any other survival topic that we can talk about. So during any long-term disaster where sewage systems are affected or garbage trucks, you know, stop running, things are going to quickly spiral out of control. From people literally going in the streets to those trying to get rid of waste by burning toxic garbage in their backyards. Now, big cities. Oh, hey, welcome Tulsa Reeves in the chat room. Glad you're here at Contrario Network. What are we talking about? Big cities and urban areas will quickly become a threat to your health and safety. So I think sanitation will be one of those most significant survival issues facing those living in an urban environment. So sanitation items, you're going to need to stockpile. For bathroom products, the 5-gallon toilet buckets or a portable camping toilet. If you can afford it, a composting toilet. And it's probably a better long-term solution. It makes cleanup a lot easier. And you're going to need rapid dissolving toilet paper. Okay, you're thinking to yourself, where in the hell am I going to find rapid dissolving toilet paper? Here's your answer. I see guest 1939 is logged in. Welcome. Hold on. We got somebody calling in. Welcome to Contra Radio Network. Who do I have?
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
I just had the test done the other day.
All right.
And it seems like I'm HIV positive.
Okay.
Well, let me see if I can put the story together. Here's what happened. It was a drunken stupor over the weekend, and I thought there was this hot chick standing right next to me, and I didn't know what was going on, so I wasn't wearing protection, put it that way, and it turned out to be a fucking monkey. I was fucking a monkey. It was a monkey with big teeth. I was out of it. I don't know what happened. I thought it was a chick. I went for it. I really wasn't paying attention, so.
Oh, did
I know, right?
I don't even know what to say, man.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Oh.
Crazy. It's crazy.
Oh. Oh, so many images going through my mind. Oh.
I know, right?
Well, yeah. And what can we do for you tonight?
Like I said, I really don't recall. I guess I really wasn't paying attention, so.
Maybe you got roofied.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Oh, GHB is not your friend.
No, well, I thought it was a chick. I went for it.
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
I didn't know. Mm. I didn't know what was going on.
Like I said, you probably got roofied by the chimp.
Crazy. It's crazy.
All right. So what can we do for you?
It was a drunken stupor over the weekend.
It's still the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't wearing protection, put it that way.
Well, there you go. All it takes is one time, man.
Yeah, I mean, getting a monkey.
Or spanking the monkey. I don't know what to tell you.
I, Yeah, I mean, well, it was a monkey with big teeth. I don't know. Like, I was out of it. I don't know what happened.
Were you at the primate house?
Like I said, I really don't recall.
So what can I do for you tonight?
No, well, seems like I'm HIV positive.
Well, how do you know?
I just had the test done the other day.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering it takes about 6 months for HIV to truly be detected by today's technology, I think you're safe.
No, well, I didn't know. I didn't know what was going on.
Well, so what can I do for you tonight?
I was fucking a monkey.
Okay. So you're into bestiality?
No, well, I didn't.
Yeah.
I thought it was a chick. I went for it.
Well, good for you. You scored.
I must have. Yeah, I mean, well, I must have. I really wasn't paying attention, so.
All right, then. Well, thanks for calling. We're going to get back to our show, man.
No, well, it turned out to be a fucking monkey.
So you've said. All right. Hey, thanks for calling. Talk to you later.
It
Bye.
Was a monkey with big teeth. I don't know.
I can't take it anymore. Okay. Where are we? We were talking about the rapid dissolving toilet paper. Where you get it is this. It's called RV, recreational vehicle toilet paper. It's made for the septic systems. It's rapid dissolving. There you go. Yes, Kenny, in the chat room, you're absolutely right. I think he does have the wrong show. Well, what are you going to do, right? All right. And second, we're going to talk about waste removal. So get garbage bags, Ziploc bags, and if you can, make a composting system. Chemical gloves and disposable plastic gloves. Now, for survival hygiene, you're going to want the soaps and waterless soaps. Hand sanitizers, we've discussed whether that's how effective they are not. Antibacterial creams and ointments, toothpaste, Band-Aids and wraps, bottles of isopropyl alcohol and hydrogen peroxide, those are cheap. You get them at the dollar store for like $1 a bottle, so you get like a case of those easily. Cleaning supplies and bleach, and of course you're going to need water. So you're going to need water purification chemicals, bleach, iodine tablets, etc. Heavy-duty pot that can be used to boil water over an open fire, and a good water filter. Off-grid survival, they recommend the Katadyn pocket water microfilter. You got Berkley's, you got Katadyn, and you got LifeStraw. So, anyways. For urban survival, now, to survive in the urban environment, you will need to learn and use the whole new set of skills and tools that you might ordinarily consider in other survival situations. So urban survival techniques and objectives are completely different from the survival skills you would use, say, like in the wilderness. Kenny in the chat room says that hand sanitizers are great fire starters. Yes, they are. This is by Dan C. He's a contributing author of SurvivalCatch.com. The Urban Reality is the name of the article. So most TV shows focus on wilderness survival. Now, these shows range from participants with plenty of supplies tasked to reach an extraction. To reach an extraction point and a defined time period. To those naked with only one survival tool on a mission to survive a predetermined amount of time. In most cases, these competitions clearly illustrate the outstanding pitfalls and skills and difficulties of the participants in their respective survival environments. And I must admit, you know, most do an exceptional job of surviving their ordeal. See, guest 1973 has logged into the chat room. Welcome. In reality, these shows represent an aspect of survival that most of you will never encounter. Thus, as much as you may learn from watching these programs, the skills seen on the show will be of very little value in your most common environment, an urban setting. Now, wilderness survival skills such as primitive fire starting, hunting, building a shelter, and water purification techniques. That's interesting. Hold on a minute. And the water purification techniques are all valuable skills to know, but are virtually useless in the urban survival environment. So situational awareness, that is, personal protection. When they talk about situational awareness, they're talking about, for the new people, they're talking about being aware of what the hell's going on around you. That's situational awareness. Personal protection, planning, and the preparation are far more important aspects of preventing and surviving an untoward urban event. Urban survival know-how is divided into two very different scenarios of the urban environment. One is the individual, small-scale, or personal adverse events such as a robbery, mugging, carjacking, home invasion. And the other is the large-scale urban survival events such as natural disasters, civil unrest, economic collapse. It's a critical event of either regional or national proportions. The likelihood you can find yourself in any one of these urban survival situations is very real. And in most cases, it will happen to each of you more than once in your lifetime. Thus, it is essential to be prepared to prevent yourself from being a victim of circumstance. Urban survival is dependent upon the application and use of six distinctive principles: planning, preparation, training, protection, communication, and safe haven. Due to the space allocated, we cannot cover each of these topics in great detail, so we will strive to provide you the foundation of each principle. With this knowledge, you can prepare yourself with any untoward event that may occur in the urban environment. Now, planning. Planning is essential to the success of any project. Without a plan, you have no direction, no defined objectives, and no documentation of your progress. Setting goals and objectives is imperative. It is the key to a successful outcome. In this case, the goal is to be supplied, trained, and prepared for any form of urban survival situations. Survival plan should consist of the following key elements: preparation, training, security, protection, and safe haven. Okay. Within each of the major sections, there are vital objectives that need to be accomplished to improve success of survival. There are two general plans you'll need to develop to meet your individual and unique circumstances. First is the plan to set it in place, all the tools you need to prepare for your ability to survive urban emergencies. The second step of planning is a group of smaller plans that are developed to assure that everyone in your family is educated on the procedures to follow during an untoward event. You should have, at a minimum, four operational plans: natural disaster plan, a get out of town plan, a fire plan, and a home invasion robbery plan. Each of these plans has distinct elements that make them independent of each other. However, they all involved one common important element. Everyone is on the same page. This means everyone will have a much better chance of surviving any of the unexpected events. Preparation. Preparation is the key to success in all aspects of your life. In a survival situation, it could mean the difference between living and dying. This is one of the hardest aspects of getting ready for an urban survival event. We are so accustomed to having everything from food, water, electricity, transportation, security, and many more things right at our fingertips. It is so easy to put off getting prepared. However, in an urban survival event, many of these essential items may not be available for extended periods of time. So, it's easy to say it will not happen here or to us. The truth is, disasters can strike anytime, anywhere, and unannounced. So being prepared is key. Trying to prepare that in the last minute is a receipt for failure. So having enough food on hand, propane to cook and heat if there is no electricity, water stored in tubs or rain barrels, provided the EPA doesn't arrest you, personal protection tools and personal protection resources such as ammo, stored fuel for emergency evacuations or backup generators, all are critical. Well, Tulsa Reeves has checked out. Thanks for checking in. And guest 1973 is also logged out. Thank you again for checking in. I appreciate it. Training and practice. There are several areas of training that you should seriously consider as part of your urban survival plan. The training programs I highly recommend are courses on situational awareness, personal protection techniques such as martial arts, firearms training, obtaining a license to carry a weapon. Oh, we got another call. Let's see what we got here. Welcome to Contra Radio Network. Who I have?
It could have been a girl.
Oh, well. Enough. It's my show. I cut them off. Yes, I did. Now, training, obtaining a license to carry a weapon, first aid, and physical fitness. Now, training in each of these areas adds depth to your preparedness and ability to manage numerous aspects of situations that may occur during an urban survival event. I cannot stress how important training is to your ability to survive. Equally important is practice. Once you have received training in any of these areas mentioned above, you must practice the skills to remain competent. Conducting drills is essential to making sure everyone is familiar with the established plans. You need to have practice drills in your home plans, such as your fire, home invasion, and get home plans. We cannot emphasize how important practice is. It is the true key to competency and can save your life. Protection. Protection is one of the key elements of surviving an adverse urban survival event, whether it is a large-scale disaster or an isolated personal event. Three distinctive areas where protection is essential: you, your family, followed by your home or dwelling, and then your travel needs. It is easy to forget, but you must protect yourself first. If you are injured or killed, then you will lose the ability to protect your family. Robberies, carjackings, home invasions all occur when you least expect it. That is how they are planned. The bad guys in these scenarios are looking for people that are not paying attention, distracted and unprepared, making them easy targets. So maintaining a strong sense of situational awareness and being prepared to protect yourself is critical to prevention and survival. The vast majority of natural disaster-related urban survival events is followed immediately by chaos. Then, in many cases, by civil unrest, such as looting. During the first two stages of the unexpected horrific urban event, it is exceedingly important that you morph into your protection mode of operation. In the latter situation, you will need to immediately increase your situational awareness and skills, be prepared to use your first aid training. Okay. Communication. Knowing where everyone is and that they are safe is always one of the first concerns of family members. How many times have you heard in the news? How many times have you heard the news reports that people within a disaster zone or home fire are trying to determine where the other members of the family are located? It is very common. Today, we have cell phones or mobile devices that enable us to communicate from almost wherever we may be. It is evident cell phones play a vital role in helping you communicate and improve our ability to find others and seek help. Don't forget, if the electricity is down, those towers are down too. You might want to look into a GoTenna. Okay. Well, I've got another call. Let's see if it's our boy again. CRN.
I'm CRN. Pretty sure the monkey had a vagina, so, you know, I think it was a girl monkey.
You're a sick bastard.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So, your safe haven. Your safe haven is kind of like your exit on an airplane. The closest one may be behind you. A safe haven is any location that provides a safe place for you and your family. See, guest 2000 has logged in. Welcome to the show. They're in the chat room. All right, there are two main safe havens. The first is a room within a facility or your home that is set up to function as a safe place for anyone to go when there is a need to protect yourself from any threat. The second is any location you have access to that will enable you to gain protection from the outside world. Now, a safe room could be as extensive as a room with steel reinforced walls and a door that contains a large supply of water and food, multiple personal protection tools, and several communication devices, or it could be as simple as a closet. In general, the safe haven in your house should be at a minimum consist of the following elements: a room with a solid core door, enhanced hinges, a locking doorknob, a personal protection tool, a communications device, water, flashlight, and a saw, and a small supply of snacks. The first is located in your house. You may have more than one safe room in your house depending on its layout. For example, you live in a three-story house, you may wish to have a safe room on each floor, at least one on the top floor and bottom floors. Naturally, family and friends can be located throughout the house. Should an event such as a home invasion take place, then you want the people on the top and bottom floors to be able to seek a safe haven in those areas without having to traverse the main floor. A safe haven can be your office, grandma's house, sister's house, friend's house. Should a large-scale event happen, such as a severe thunderstorm, which I don't know, ice storm, no, snowstorm, no, tornado, yes, or flood, yes, you may not be able to get to your home. So the nearest safe haven may be one of these locations. Thus, as part of your preparation planning, you should have keys to all these locations on your keychain. In addition, this should be part of your natural disaster plan so that your family will know where you will most likely be if any one of these types of events should occur. Now, we're going through there. Look, a thunderstorm, ice storm, snowstorm. Guess what? You'll know within a half hour to an hour whether you're going to get those three types of storms. Tornado, yeah, look, you know where you live. You know when it, you know, it's kind of looking kind of hinky outside. Okay, maybe it could be. But that's why I don't consider thunderstorm, ice storm, snowstorm. You know, if you can't get home in time, you better have a damn good reason. They're going to tell you it's coming. I guess 2006 was in, now they're out. All right. So in summary, urban survival is considerably different than wilderness survival and requires another whole set of skills and understanding. You'll need to think differently and act accordingly because the obstacles and challenges will be totally different than if you are in the wilderness. However, the fundamental result is the same. Survive. Start the process of preparing, training, and practicing now. Don't put it off because it will be necessary for your survival in the urban environment. And then we found this. Then I found this article. It's kind of interesting. I didn't think I'd find it there, but I did. And it's urban preparedness tips. And this was from Stumble Upon Reddit. I just happened to be cruising the internet and came across this. I thought interesting. So I thought I'd tell you about it. See, 2011 has logged in. Guest 2011 has logged in. Thank you for joining the show. Now, whether you're unsure of how to plan for a bug-out situation because you don't know where you would bug out to, or you simply prefer the idea of battening down the hatches in your current dwelling to weather whatever catastrophe may strike, urban survival and bugging in are two important topics that are quite worthy of consideration. Most people now live in developed suburban and urban areas rather than out in the countryside. So in the event of emergency, many people are going to find themselves trying to survive in the concrete jungle. How well you can survive amidst looting, violence, and the desperation of the under or completely unprepared will depend upon your own good sense and your ability to prepare ahead of time. Aside from stocking up on basic supplies, food, and water, you don't have to spend a fortune to prepare yourself for urban survival or bugging in either. First and foremost, one of the most important things to consider is self-defense for yourself and your loved ones. If an emergency crops up or a disaster strikes, law enforcement will likely be overwhelmed or possibly disbanded entirely, leaving civilians vulnerable to criminals. Those who are clearly well-prepared become immediate targets of the unprepared. To mitigate your risk of being targeted, there are some very good things you can do. So please note that these are basic guidelines, which can and should be adapted to the specifics of your circumstances and the emergency or disaster that has occurred. So, one, identify local resources ahead of time, including water, alternative water sources, as if and when the taps run. Well, let's see if he's called back. Yes, welcome to CRN.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, I'm from New York, so I think about this kind of stuff a lot, and I have a question for you, like a hypothetical.
All right.
Let's say there were a natural disaster, or let's say, God forbid, a terrorist attack, and landmarks were to be hit, like, say, a zoo and animals were running around. What do you do if you get fucked by a monkey and it gives you AIDS?
For your case, eat a bullet.
You know?
Oh, man. He must have all kinds of people calling it. That's all right. But also to maintain any semblance of cleanliness. All right, where are we? So you have to identify water sources if and when the taps run dry. A reliable water source and method of purification is critical not only to basic survival, but also to maintaining any semblance of cleanliness and proper hygiene, which is in turn necessary to avoid the spread of infectious diseases. Avoid detection by boarding over the windows, keeping lights off at night. Don't underestimate the pitch black of a night without urban light pollution. Your lights will stand out and draw attention to you, so keep them off. And entering or exiting your home from a discreet location or when no one is around. Secure your home or dwelling as well as you can without being too obvious and drawing attention from the exterior. Additional reinforcement at doors, if not to stop, then at least to slow intruders such as door jammers or barricades. Chain locks and additional bolts can all make entries and exits more secure. If it is within your means to do so, you can also use the Russian method or of a double door. The front door of an entry point is a heavy, solid metal door with multiple bolts and chain locks, followed by a secondary door of heavy, solid wood with a peephole for viewing. Additional chain locks, bolts, etc. If you've ever seen a traditional Russian tenement, you know what this looks like. Tulsa, I agree. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Yeah. He's probably one of the unprepared, too. That doesn't matter. You're here. We're here. We're going to do the show. So whenever possible, try to cultivate a closer and more unified community amongst your neighbors ahead of time. If the shit hits the fan, welcome guest 2018. Guest 2011 logged out. Thanks for checking in. So whenever possible, try to cultivate a closer, more unified community amongst your neighbors ahead of time. If the shit hits the fan and you're prepared, but no one else on your street is, you may find yourself having to hide from or deceive the people you live alongside. This sounds vaguely like the Twilight Zone episode of The Bunker. Watch it. Catch it online. And I agree, Tulsa, it is inappropriate. So, alternatively, your needy neighbors may end up targeting you in their desperation. A close and better developed community is especially necessary in the event of a long-term survival situation that may arise following a series collapse or a disaster. Okay. Maintain an unattractive appearance to your home. Now, while many people may be inclined to erect a veritable fortress around their house, this is more apt to draw attention to your location. A house that looks guarded and well-stocked is an attractive target to roaming gangs who will probably outnumber and or outgun you eventually. By comparison, a house that doesn't look like much, is overgrown in the yard, and has every appearance of already having been ransacked a time or two is far less likely to attract attention. All right, go ahead, Tulsa. We're standing by. So now in terms of your food and water, when you're planning or bugging in, you're at something of an advantage. Bugging in has its disadvantages too, but if you have the room for food storage, you can eat like a proverbial king while bugging in. Compared to bugging out, when every ounce of weight in your pack matters and canned food is heavy, luxurious item, And if you've got an empty pantry to fill, canned foods offer a great economical investment in tasty quality food that will generally last 3 to 5 years or longer. Compare that to an MRE or some astronaut food. Also, avoid burning your dwelling down. That's important. Keep a few fire extinguishers stored for use in case of emergency and practice safe cooking rules. All right, let's see what we have. Go ahead, caller. Welcome to CRN.
I usually finish by jizzing in the monkey's fur, so I don't know how I...
You know, Kenny says bugging in requires night vision. I would agree with you. It's probably not a bad idea. And they're pretty cheap now. You don't have to get the big starlight scopes. You don't need it. I hear you, Tulsa. Don't worry about it. Oh, where were we? Oh, yeah. Lighting fires inside your home or using a grill is not recommended. If you don't have a fireplace, don't light fires inside, period. Likewise, don't leave anything cooking unattended. If you ever, you know, try to dispose of trash or yard debris by burning it, be extremely careful. And finally, a well-packed urban survival bag, also sometimes called a get-home bag, can be valuable in case of an emergency that strikes while you're away from home. Packed with slightly different supplies than a standard bug-out bag, an urban survival bag is designed to help you survive an emergency long enough to travel from your current location to your home or to another suitable location you intend to bug out from. So items that are commonly packed in an urban survival bag include a basic emergency first aid kit, a fine particle mask, also known as an N95 mask. Yes, Pulse, I hear you. No. Hold on a minute while I'm in the chat room here. I have to answer. There you go. Okay. Back, sorry. The fine particle mask or possible gas mask. You can get the M117A gas mask. Those are the old military ones. You just got to get the filters for them. If you're going to use or you can use an N95, you can get those like at Home Depot or whatnot. That's a fine particle mask. A window punch for use as escaping from a vehicle or building when glass obstructs you. A crowbar. Potentially a small amount of cash, a pair of sturdy shoes, and possibly socks, especially for women who wear heels regularly. Sunglasses, handkerchief, or a bandana, and some water or snacks for the trip home. It might be a long walk. You'll probably also want a flashlight with spare batteries, small portable radio, and a thermal blanket and or warm jacket, depending on the climate you live in. You might want coins for operating a payphone if they're up and working, and I haven't seen a payphone in years. And if you rely on your cell phone for important numbers, then write down those numbers in an address book and toss it in your emergency bag just in case. For long-term urban survival, following a bug-in, there are several additional points to take into consideration, but to get everything here would go beyond the scope of the article. So suffice to say, for long-term urban survival following a crisis, emergency, or other collapse, there would be concerns with trash, vermin, and rodents, as well as sanitation, human waste removal, medical care, new food products, guard duties, and additional security, and keeping yourself healthy. Oh, yeah. Oh, got to go to the chat room real quick. All right. Here's the other. That article I thought was pretty good. That's from Survivopedia.com. Survivopedia.com. And how about urban survival skills? 8 skills you can't live without. Okay, where do we find this one? Oh, again, Survivopedia. It's good stuff. Much of what is written about survival assumes a wilderness survival situation. There are several advantages to trying to survive in the wild, mostly that of not having to worry about all the other people around you. On top of that, you have the availability of all the resources that nature provides for you. On the other hand, I got my left hand. When trying to survive in an urban situation, you have to erect The exact opposite. Basically, no natural resources, as well as other people around you who are vying for those same resources. Nevertheless, urban survival is the situation which most of us are likely to find ourselves. Being able to trap a squirrel in a snare or building a debris shelter in the woods may not be as important as some other skills we'll need, especially if we're trying to survive a financial collapse. Now, while some survival skills, like purifying water and starting a fire, are universal, there are many other skills which are critical for an urban survival situation. Many of those skills affect how we deal with the other people around us, specifically protecting ourselves and our families from them. There are also some skills which are specific to a financial collapse, which may not be as important in the aftermath of other disasters. We're not going to bother looking at universal survival skills here, but rather those which are specific to surviving in an urban survival situation. Okay. Self-defense. The most dangerous predators on the earth are the two-legged ones. In any crisis situation, you can be sure that they will be out in force, especially... since they will probably not have made the necessary preparations to be able to take care of themselves. So when they can't find food for their families, they will become desperate and go into predator mode. Bartering. Oh, try it again, Tulsa. We'll get to you. While most people won't have stockpiled supplies for the emergency, everyone will have something, the ability to barter, making sure that you can get a good deal for your trade. Goods is a valuable skill, especially when you consider that the people you'll be bartering with will be stressed by the situation. Kenny says in the chat room, you can buy good traps at Big R for under $10 each. Great for trapping small animals. All right. Gardening. All right. Let's see if we get Tulsa here. Go ahead, Tulsa. Welcome to CRN.
Well, I was in Fukushima around the time of the earthquake near the plant, the nuclear radioactive plant.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Go ahead.
And for about a week, there were about neon green ooze coming out the tip of my cock. I was...
Oh, man, somebody's got access to a lot of phone lines. Oh, well, that's all right. We just keep going. See, people like that are the ones that are going to be unprepared, and that's okay. Oh, well, gardening. It seems that food is always in shortage in a crisis situation. Having the ability to grow at least some of your own will help you take care of your family. You can start a vegetable garden anywhere, even if you live in an apartment. Vertical gardening makes it possible to grow a very productive garden, even if you live in an apartment. And vertical gardening makes it possible to grow a very productive garden on the balcony of an apartment. Okay. Adaptability. Any crisis requires doing things that we aren't accustomed to. Being adaptable makes it easier to adjust to those changes comfortably. One important area of adaptability in a financial collapse is the ability to find cheaper ways of doing things so that you can make your phone go further. What else we got there? Teaching. Regardless of what type of crisis strikes, your children still need to be educated. The local schools might close down or it might become dangerous to take your children there. If either of those happens, you may have to suddenly start homeschooling. The ability to teach your own children can make a huge difference in their future. Kenny says, long-term seed packs, a couple of different vendors worth. I agree. Medical skills. Medical services are always overrun during a crisis. At times, just when getting basic services can be difficult. Proper first aid, as well as knowing how to treat common ailments, can save your family from a lot of problems and may even save someone's life. While selling these skills could be dangerous from a legal point of view, saving a neighbor's life is a sure way of making them indebted to you. Maybe. Repairing equipment. We've become a disposable society in which we are accustomed to throwing things away and buying another, rather than repairing things so that we can continue using them. So, however, those new items may not be available. And even if they are, you may not like to have the funds to buy them or barter for them if you don't have the right, you know, items to barter for it. So being able to fix things yourself can save a lot of money. This is also a marketable skill that you might be able to use to support yourself during a crisis. Emergency home repair. Many types of disasters can cause damage to your home, especially weather disasters such as hurricanes. The ability to repair your home may make it possible for your family to stay in your home, even while others are forced to vacate there. So at the same time, this is another marketable skill which you can use to support your family after the crisis if you are unable to depend upon your normal job. That's true. So always remember that more skills you have, the greater possibility you have of surviving. Those additional skills also provide you with more opportunities to find work during a financial crisis. Many jobs will simply disappear during such a time. So the more skills you have, the more chances you have of finding a job or starting your own business. And he's just talking about a financial collapse. Kenny says, I'm taking a second advanced trauma class and have sat in a couple of dental classes. Again, those are the kind of things that you might be able to barter, or since grid goes down, might be able to keep you alive with some of the essentials that should you run out of anything. So that's a good thing. Now, where do you find this one? How about 5 urban survival tips to keep you alive? The bugoutbagguide.com. As part of developing the ultimate urban survival kit with the team at Ready to Go Survival, our conversation turned to urban survival planning and strategy. We talk about our experiences with the various snowstorms, hurricanes, blackouts, and terrorist threats we have had been through and compare notes. So they're going to share the top 5 urban survival tips that came out of the brainstorming session. If you're not one of the 80.7% of people who live in an urban environment, feel free to share these with anyone you care about who does. Top urban survival tip number 1. What's that, Kenny? A good scissors and you're a barber. Yeah, there you go. That's true. Urban survival tip number 1, move fast before exit routes are clogged or closed. This is a clear first mover advantage when evacuating a highly populated area. Once everyone around you gets the same idea, getting through the exits, bridges, tunnels, highways, or train routes will become hopelessly clogged. So to ensure a speedy exit, make sure you bought your bug out bag is packed, accessible, and ready to go. Make sure everyone you are bugging out with is on the same page for when to initiate your bug out plan and where to meet. When in doubt, move. Don't wait for everyone around you to agree. Get going. Be a survivor, not a statistic. Urban survival tip 2, be prepared for environmental hazards. This is important. The modern urban landscape is full of dangers that becomes exposed in any type of disaster. Put all manner of dangerous debris in the air, from asbestos and concrete dust to broken glass and toxic smoke. We need to be sure that our bug out bag has the proper protective gear to keep us moving through such hazards. You never know what you'll need to scramble over or through to get to safety. Sturdy shoes and well-made pants and a long sleeve shirt should be your default bug out clothing, even in summer, to protect you from jagged or burning debris. Additionally, consider having environmental protective gear to protect the rest of your body. You also need eye protection, respiratory protection, hand protection. Urban survival tip number 3, be a gray man or a woman. The idea of being a gray man is based around being fully prepared for inconspicuous as to not draw unwanted attention to yourself. Now, this is going to serve 2 purposes. Being a gray man will help you blend in with the crowd if people are being singled out or if you're trying to evade a pursuer. Being a gray man will make you seem like a regular person instead of a target of opportunity for aggressive people who are less prepared than you. There are many ways to be a gray man, and a lot of them just come down to common sense and not advertising your presence. Wear normal looking clothes, not camo or other tactical looking gear. Remove any military style logos that can, you know, or RTGS logos that can be removed at a moment's notice to slip into the crowd. Do not open your bug out bag in public where others can see it as loaded with food and water and survival gear that they may need. Avoid staring or unnecessary eye contact. Conceal any obvious survival gear on your person. Conceal it. Number four, it's better to look like a threat than a target. Urban scenario. You're inherently more likely to encounter other people. Some of these people may be aggressive, desperate, or seeking to take advantage of others in the chaos. It is best to deter such advances before they even start by making yourself look like more trouble than it is worth to bother you. Travel in a group if you can. Single people are far juicier targets than two or more people who are obviously together. Have a self-defense item ready to deploy if you are approached. This can be pepper spray, firearm, knife, or other hand weapon. Showing you are armed and ready to defend yourself shows that you are not a target of opportunity. Be aware of your surroundings. Situational awareness. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so be aware of your surroundings. If you're being followed or possibly entering a dangerous area, keep your eyes open and change course immediately. Keep in mind, the gray man tips above to keep you off the radar of inquisitive people. That's all. Number five, follow your instincts, not the mob. When a disaster hits, 99% of people are completely unprepared. All right, you're listening to the radio show, this one, so you're obviously of a mindset of preparing for the worst before it happens. Stick to your bug out plan and improvise when necessary. If a mob of people is heading one way, it doesn't mean that is the best way for you. You don't need to go in the opposite direction as everyone else, but look for the safest way for you to reach your destination. So follow your instincts when faced with a hard choice, not just the path of least resistance. And Kenny says in the chat room, you should have a bug out plan with routes planned, maps are needed, and obstacles planned for. Absolutely. Another way to do that is you've got to recon your routes that you want to take and where you want to go. What else? Oh, you know, there's a lot to be said. Maybe you've heard the term gut instinct. And one of the things you'll notice when you're talking to people or you're looking at a situation and something just doesn't seem, it just doesn't seem right to you. You can't put your finger on it. It's just something inside you, something inside your brain. You got the bells going off, the whistles going off, red lights flashing in your mind. You just can't put your finger on it, but something isn't right. Listen to that instinct. Listen to it and follow it. That's very important. And it'll probably keep you alive. Don't wait to try to decide if all those bells and whistles going off in your head are right or wrong. Just assume they're right and move on it. That has saved many a life. And if you talk to any police officer that's worked the streets for, you know, a few years, they'll tell you about it. Military veterans who've been in combat, they'll tell you about it too. It's nothing you can explain. It's just what I've described to you. The bells and whistles are going off in your head. Something's not right. You can't quite put your finger on it. You're just like, man, something. You just know. You got that feeling. Something isn't right. Listen to that instinct. It's telling you something. It's warning you. And if you can't figure out right away, then back out. Get out of that situation. Get out of that area. Do whatever you got to do. But there's a reason why all the bells and whistles are going off. And you don't have to understand it. You just have to listen to it and pay attention to it. That's all you got to do. Okay. That's about it that I can come up with from urban survival. That's all the information I could find that I thought was worth it. some of the stuff, it's like, eh, I kind of think, eh, maybe not. But like I said, if you want to read these articles, they're on the Contra Radio Network Facebook page. You can read them yourself. Follow the links if you like. Oh, good point, Kenny. You know what they did say are binoculars, and a careful look can alert you to danger. That's true, too. I didn't see that in any of the articles for a bug-out bag. Binoculars are good, period. You know, and Kenny was talking about in the chat room, he was talking about the night vision. You can go to you know, they got these, one of the, it's a night vision monocle, monocular. It's not a, it's not binoculars, not two lenses, just one. It does the same thing. Pick it up for like 50, 60 bucks. You don't need to have, what's the, you know, military trained, you know, military grade hardware. You just don't. I mean, you can get it if you want. It's not bad. If you guys, you can afford it to do it. Absolutely. But binoculars, that's a great item to have. And you don't need the ones that has the laser that shoots out there and gets you the range. I mean, it, you could buy it if you want. You don't need to. But just being able to see, you know, before you go into a, an area might make all the difference to you. So with that said, that's about all the information I could find. And we talked a little bit about the Patriot standoff there in Oregon at the beginning of the show. Interested to see what, you know, I know what other people are saying and all that, but anyways, enough. And I have to apologize again to the listeners for, you know, there's some things I just can't block out and I can't filter, because now if I had somebody else like a co-host who could sit there and go through the show and screen the calls, it'd be a lot easier, but I'm the only one doing it. So I have to apologize for some of you not being able to get through. My apologies. But, you know, people do what they do. And the unprepared, well, they'd rather screw around than do what they need to do, be responsible and prepare themselves for when the grid down situation comes, because it will come. It's just a matter of time. What'd you say there, Kenny? Kenny also says they're extremely useful for watching at night. Yes, they are. That's true. I'd like to thank Tulsa for listening in. Sorry I couldn't get through. But it is what it is. All right. And that's it for the Saturday show. Again, we had to delay it. Had some issues I had to take care of first. Don't like doing that. Try to keep that Saturday 8 o'clock slot open. So we'll be doing the roundtable report Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Hope you'll join us then. Until that time, for my Prepper and Patriot friends, I say to you, stay safe, stay alert, and stay vigilant, because you never know when that crazy event's going to happen. So until next time, see you Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. I'm John Jeffers and the Contra Radio Network. Thanks again, and good night.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.